wriggle your shoulders in defense, he said, 'cause we're not dead yet. He laced up his shoes on his path, clear to choose now.
Hello, hello, friends, and welcome back to the 8th episode of This Liminal Life. I think this probably should be something like our 25th episode, but we took a little bit of a hiatus. If you don't know, my name is Brian Holt. I'm the co-host of this show. Along with me is my awesome, lovely, and hot wife, Rebecca Holt.
Hey there.
Real quick, getting into that, I wanted to share this. I forgot to mention this to you before, but this whole, when I said hot wife, I kind of gave Rebecca a look because I found out this week that hashtagging hot wife, which I've used a few times on Instagram and Facebook for pictures of my hot wife, I found out this week at work that that is actually not a good thing to post if you're just wanting to say your wife is hot. So apparently the guys at work, I won't mention their names, but I somehow came to tell them that I had hashtagged my wife, hot wife, on Instagram, and somehow that photo got liked by a very... shall we say, not so reputable Instagram page. And I was saying, hey, can I delete likes from my photos? Because I was like, I don't like the fact that this Instagram account has liked my photo. And one of the guys said, well, you know what hot wife means, right? And what would you think it meant, Rebecca?
I don't know, just... corny dudes who want to say how amazing their wives are, which, you know, is
yeah,
nice.
Like youth good pastors and a lot of pastors will say, hey, my smoking hot wife or whatever. Well, apparently the hashtag hot wife means that your wife is open to having relationships with other men and that their husband is totally cool with that. And I had no idea that I was telling Instagram that that, which is not a fact because it's not true, because I do not like that and you do not do that. So I just, that was one of those moments where I was like, holy cow, my brain exploded. I went through all my Instagram and deleted all those pictures because I was like, I don't want anybody to think that I've said this to the world.
So lesson for the day. For, I guess for me, be careful what you write when you use hashtags.
That's right.
Or like me, don't ever use them.
Just don't use hashtags.
It's very simple.
Yeah, so that was one of those crazy moments. And so actually the guys I work with, now we've been hashtagging everything. So if somebody says something that can be misconstrued, we'll say hashtag this. And then I'll look at my friend and go, what does that mean? I'm sure it means something.
Oh my gosh, it's scary.
So it's kind of a big joke with us now. So for anything, that was just kind of like a fun experience this week. What else has been going on, Beck?
We are finally finished with football, and I feel like I have my life back. We loved having football those 3 months, and our son just loved it. Ate it up and did a really, really good job.
Yeah.
He did an excellent job in his first season, and I think won the respect and admiration of the coaches and his teammates, and so we were grateful that it was positive, but I am grateful it is over.
Yes, it was like three nights a week
at games on Saturday.
Yeah.
It's been really nice to just be at home.
Yeah.
I am a mom who enjoys being at home and just sort of taking it step by step throughout the day and getting things done and taking care of my kids. And it was just a real, just took a lot of effort to take care of the oldest one in the season.
And we knew it was going to be a big commitment like that going into it. We knew we were making a big commitment. And so I don't necessarily regret that, but it's just good to be done with that for a little while. And Micah, man, I was so proud of him. He did so well. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite moments of the season was after the game that they won to get them into the playoffs. Micah goes out to the fence where the opposing team is walking back to their cars, and he's congratulating and telling them the other players what a great job they did. And that
he took it upon himself. Nobody told him to do it. I really had no idea what he was doing. And he literally just was personally walking up with his hand extended, very much like a man.
Yeah.
And was trying to, you know, just embrace the other, you know, teammates and, well, not teammates, but, you know, opposing players and just, you know, look them in the eye and just talk to them as they were leaving. And, you know, that's easier to do that when you've won and it's on your own turf, but nobody told him to do that. So that was, of course, I was like beaming.
Yeah.
Very thankful.
Yeah, that was really cool. So that's done. Football's over.
We're getting ready for Thanksgiving. You know, we're just in the thick of school. The boys, I have to brag on the boys again. They came home and both of them got all A's.
Yeah.
And they have really just taken on school as their own. It's not that I don't help them. I help them, you know, day to day, just stay focused. But for the majority, they shoulder their school load on their own.
Yeah.
So I'm very thankful.
And they got that from you, not me.
Well, I don't know.
I mean, I was never a straight A student. So anyway, yeah. And I mentioned this at the beginning, but we do want to apologize for taking such a long break from our podcasting. We had a lot of stuff going on. We'll talk about some of that later. But yeah, it's been a long time. We kind of let things go as far as the podcast goes. And yeah, who knows? Maybe nobody's listening to it anyway. But we kind of wanted to get back into it. And so sorry about that. Anything else you want to talk about this week as far as what's happening?
No.
Okay. Well, I think we're going to take a break real quick and then get into a little bit of our story about our engagement.
What makes the birds sing a new song? Who gives his life, ransoms us from wrong? What makes the mountains rise to the sky? Who gives us hope, buys us for a price?
So we've been chronicling somewhat our time of dating, or whatever you want to call it, courtship, and our relationship leading up to marriage. And in some ways, I think the reason I wanted to do that was so that we would have at least some record of our relationship. You know, I like to think of our kids maybe listening to this later on in life and either laughing at us or just taking some ideas or thoughts that they might want to incorporate or they might want to not incorporate in their life. And so anyway, let's talk about our engagement. So where do we start with that? We start with a ring? Do we start with...
Well, I think there was a... there was kind of... The first part was just us getting to know one another and then the beginning of our relationship. And that was very... It was just really fun. And I think there was a shift in our thinking and our attitude towards life when I was in my junior year. Because you were in your senior year.
Yeah.
And the shift, I think, was that we were sort of at the end of our time in college. And we knew that college was going to come to an end and that we were going to have to make some decisions. And I think that was always in the back of our minds because we were very kind of a focused couple and a serious couple. We knew that this was, Lord willing, going to go towards marriage. But I think I remember feeling a shift in my thinking. And we... There's actually a lot of little stories. I think you bumped it up. Like you bumped it up. I don't even know if we were engaged yet. Maybe you had talked to my dad. I didn't know about it or something. And then you wanted us to get married while I was still in school. And, but you knew that you need to kind of run that by me. And then I was going to run it by my mom, who in turn was going to run it by my dad.
And there's a whole chain of command here.
Anyway, I just, you know, it was a lot of stuff. And looking back, I'm thinking my parents were really gracious because you and I were really young to be talking about really big stuff.
Yeah, we were 22.
20 when we were talking about all this, because we got engaged when I wasn't even 21.
And I look at 20-year-olds now, and I'm like,
they don't know anything.
Gosh, they're like babes.
So I think
not my, babes like cute, hot, like you're a babe, but
like babies.
They're babies.
So, but you know what? It was, I think in your mind, you were ready to just get things going.
Yeah.
And I was a little more reserved. I mean, I was going to student teach my last semester, and you will have graduated. So in your mind, you had a job, you had insurance, you were done with school. Let's get married.
Yeah. I mean, before Jesus comes back, let's get married.
Oh my gosh. So, but actually my parents were on board. Now, I did have a discussion with my dad later, because I guess as he thought about it, it began to freak him out that I was going to get married before I had a diploma in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting there like sobbing on the couch, talking to my dad about it, trying to figure out what the heck is going on. And in the end, he gave his blessing. And then we got engaged in March.
Yeah. So what's funny is talking to your dad, I took him out to Sunday Park. So there's a restaurant called Sundays, I think, right? And I basically we sat down and we're eating. And he goes, yeah, so I hear that you want to marry Rebecca. Yeah, that's cool. That's fine. Let me just tell you, California is too close. Move as far away as you can. He was like,
and that's totally my dad.
He was like, California's too close. Go as far away as you can. And how about I just write you a check for $2,000? You can elope.
That's totally my dad. Oh my gosh.
He was, yeah, it was just, I didn't even have to broach the topic. I didn't have to bring it up. He's just like, oh yeah, so I hear you guys want to get married. That's totally cool. Just move far away. Stay away from family.
And what's so interesting is that my dad, it's not that my dad is flippant about these things. He was very protective of us girls growing up. He doesn't take marriage lightly. These are big things. But I think he had known that I was a serious person.
Yeah.
And I hadn't dated and done crazy things in either high school or in college. And Brian had known our family at that point for 3 years.
Yeah.
And so,
I'd had your sister fart on my leg.
Oh my gosh, yes.
At family prayer.
Yes. He had seen all kinds of things that my family does. So Brian was already kind of a member of the family, but I think when you sit down and you try and have a serious discussion with my dad, he can't do it.
He doesn't want to deal with that. He's just like, okay, whatever. Let's talk about Colorado.
So Brian didn't have one of those intense conversations, and what are you going to do, you know, and how are you going to treat my daughter? He didn't have all that crazy stuff, which is, you know what, if some dads want to do that,
that's what I
can
do.
Understand.
I want that boy to pee his pants. Like, that's going to be my goal.
I think that's awful.
If some boy comes to ask for Chloe or Jane's hand, like, I want them to pee their pants. And if they do, they can have their hand. If not, sorry.
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, we'll have to talk about this.
You don't think that's a good plan?
I think that's awful. That is not the way to do it.
I just want to scare them so bad. And if they're that scared and they pee their pants and they're still wanting to marry my daughter, I feel like you're...
They passed the test.
Yeah, you've got enough in you. But if you gave up...
They've got enough,
after
they've
urinating
got enough pee in them.
Yeah.
That's what it means.
If they still come back, or if they don't, it means they're too cocky. If they do and they don't come back, then good riddance, right?
I don't know. Let's just see how we really handle it.
I have a feeling I really won't be like that at all.
No.
But anyway, so I sat down with your dad. He told me to move far away and that he cut me a check to elope. And so then I can't remember if I think I already had
the
ring. I'm not sure.
Yeah, so I don't know the whole details about, because that was your whole, I mean, that's the guy's thing.
Yeah.
And all I know is that he knew I love the mountains, which I do.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, I was going to talk about the ring.
Oh, okay. Then talk about the ring.
So, because that came before the mountains. So so I have a close family friend whose father was in the diamond trade, and So it was so wild. The way that they deal with this is, I think I've told you this. Basically, I told this lady, our good friend, okay, here's my price range. Here's what I'm looking for. She talks to her contacts in New York. They mailed me a diamond to my college mailbox and I've not paid for anything. They just mailed this diamond to me for me to look at and say whether I wanted it. And of course, I'm like, okay, it's a diamond. What? Like, I don't know what I'm looking at. It's shiny and it's little and it costs a lot. So I shipped it back to them with my check and with your grandmother's setting that I got from, either got from you or from your mom.
No, it was my great-grandmother.
Your great-grandmother's
setting. Her name was also Rebecca, and I was named for her. But she had a tiny finger.
Yeah. So I shipped that back to them with the diamond, with the check, with the setting. They basically did all the work and then mailed it back to me, which was just incredible that this is the way. They shipped a diamond to a college student. Trusting them, but I guess it's because of my.
It's because it's all because it was your friend, and she knew that you would not steal it. Now you might lose it, but you wouldn't steal it.
Yeah. So anyway, so we made a plan to go hiking. We'd hiked this one trail before. Was it White Oak Canyon?
Well, back up really quickly. What I think is funny is that you and John Ramirez were taking your flashlights night and like looking
the
at
night
it.
Before.
Just going ooh and ah over how beautiful it was.
Yeah.
That is funny.
And
to
I think
me.
I got it in the mail like the day before. Like it was very quickly. So I got it because I was scared to death I was going to lose it. And so we got this little flashlight out and we're trying to like make designs on the ceiling of our dorm room with the engagement ring.
It is like not even college. It's like preschool.
Oh, preschool with a college budget, maybe, or an adult budget. So we had this plan to go out to White Oak Canyon, mm-hmm. which we'd been to before on like another hiking trip with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And we really liked it. And I decided that's where I was going to propose. So we drove up there. And what's fun, one of the things that I remember about that trip is that Here Today had just recorded. We had just gotten back our 4-song demo that we had recorded, and we listened to it basically nonstop the whole way up to the mountain. I'm pretty sure. I don't know if you remember that at all.
I don't remember. I really don't.
I think you asked if we could stop listening to it at one point because it was 4 songs and it was like an hour and some odd.
I just
drive.
Remember when you did it another time when we were doing something, like doing something with horse jumps.
Yeah.
And so the truck was going around.
It was around the same time.
Yes. And it was like, I think we've listened to this for 5 hours.
Yeah.
The same thing. And your brother Dave looked at me and he was just laughing because both he and I were going crazy.
Yep.
So anyway.
So we drove up, we hiked. We didn't even get to the falls.
Mm-mm.
I have actually never seen the falls until I took the boys on a hiking trip. So we hiked.
It was incredibly foggy, and we actually, the higher we got, the more foggy it became. So I do remember that
we got, because we started at the top and hiked down.
Well, I guess the lower we got then.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So we pulled off on this like little trail and found a little rock that I had actually seen on our other hike, where it was kind of this clearing in the woods that was off the trail. And I had in my bag, I had like a bottle of sparkling cider. I had a blanket. I think I had like some picnic stuff, and I had the ring in one of my pockets. And I was like checking my pocket every 30 seconds to make sure the ring was still there.
I was just enjoying the hike.
Yeah, you had no idea.
This is great.
Did you know?
I mean, I knew that it was going to be something special, or it was a really nice thought because normally we didn't do that.
Yeah,
but I don't think I knew that you were going to propose.
So we get down to the spot and we stop, and I got my Bible, which, you know, was in my bag also. And I read Psalm 31 to you.
I mean, Proverbs 31.
Proverbs 31. And then I know that I said, I just basically said, will you marry me? And my plan was, because I had never told you that I loved you.
Mm-hmm.
And my plan was to tell you that I loved you and then ask you to marry me. but I actually never told you I loved you until after you said yes, which happened after you did what?
Well, it was one of those moments where I'm sitting here thinking, this was the plan. Like, we started dating one another with the goal of marriage in mind. Mm-hmm. And now here we are. Yeah. And it's actually happening. But then it hit me. This is just more than it had other times.
It hit me. This is a big deal.
This is a really big deal. And so I think I said something like, hold on a second. I need to go pray. So I like left him and went somewhere else. Or
sitting there in the woods.
I know. And I just felt like I needed to just get before the Lord very briefly and just say, I need to make sure this is right. If there's anything that I haven't seen or that isn't right here, I need to
Lord,
know.
Please know. Please know.
No, I did not say that. But there was just a lot of peace. There was nothing in my mind. And I actually remember making myself wait because I wanted to be still for a moment and just take it in and mm-hmm. think about it. I made myself wait. I do remember that. And there was just nothing. There was nothing but peace. And I mean, I have to trust the Lord would have shown me a long time ago. But I wanted to do, in some ways, the Lord the honor of just going, all right, God, you're over all of this. I need to make sure.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then I eventually came back. And I think you were like, what? What did you just do?
I don't know. I think I sat there and prayed on my knee. I think I looked at the Bible again. It was like reading Proverbs 31 again.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. And praying and like, please, Lord, make her say yes. Make her say yes. And then you came back and you said yes. And I think that's when I like, I think I realized while you were gone that I hadn't told you I loved you yet. And then so when you got back and said yes, I was like, I love you, I love you. I think I said it like a bunch of times.
Yeah, you did. It was really funny. It was like, okay, wow, we haven't had a lot of affection like this in our relationship, so it was kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, it was very, now I will say, if I had any advice for people who are interested in, or in that stage of getting engaged, if you know you're supposed to marry one another and you've got green lights from the parents and jobs or just whatever is set up, do not do 9 months. That's what we ended up doing. Our engagement was 9 months, and that was too long.
That's what any time anybody asks me, I'm like, 6 months, you got enough time to plan it, and you know, you can do okay. So yeah, 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So, although 9 months, or no, if we had done 6 months, it would have been right around the fire at your parents' house.
Yeah,
so
I was going to say.
We'll talk about that another time. Mm-hmm. But.
So anyway, that's our engagement story. It's nothing amazing. I mean, it's our amazing story, and we love it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was just time. It was time to get engaged.
Yeah. All right. So after that exciting topic, we're going to come back and talk about our one topic of the podcast, which is kind of a little bit of a turn. We're going to talk about death, so we're going to be right back to talk about that.
Each day brings pain, and you claim it gladly, so you can complain.
All right, we are back, and we are going to talk about something that has really been on our minds a lot lately because we have experienced a lot of it lately.
What's some of the reason that we haven't been able to do the podcast?
Yeah. Yeah, so there's been a lot of death around us lately, a lot of folks passing away, a lot of people. So let's talk about that. What was the first one? We actually mentioned this, I think, before.
We did. We talked about my friend Carrie, who did, in fact, lose her husband about a month ago. And it was very hard.
Yeah.
But, you know, for believers who are surrounded by other believers, you know, it's just, you feel like you're swimming, I think, in a sea of grace and love and kindness. She let me know. And was prompted, I guess, by some of her Fredericksburg pastors to get in touch. I don't think she knew what to do. Mm-hmm. She got in touch with me, and I actually immediately went up and spent the night with her and just sort of was with her during those first few hours after he died.
Yeah.
And, you know, just was able to listen to her and comfort her and kind of steady her because she has her family. Carrie and I are very close. And sometimes, I don't know, sometimes it can be different. If you have a family where you can truly just be vulnerable and honest and they care for you and they know you, then that's a blessing. And I think Carrie has that with her mom.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you just want a friend,
yeah,
you know, that you've known and you can say anything and
yeah,
there's no pressure of family. And so it was just a privilege to be with her. And then I ended up coming back after 2 days. I went to church with her, and I couldn't believe she went to church the day after her husband passed.
Yeah.
And she was very brave, and there were many tears. But and then it was the following week that we went to his life celebration, and Brian led worship, and I spoke. And it really, the whole event actually, although we were there because of Tony's death, it really was just a celebration of who God is and Tony's life. And, you know, it was just, it was very hard.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's so much grace and hope when you're, everybody's looking to God.
Yeah.
And we know that he's with the Lord.
Yeah. And I mean, that service in itself was, I think it will be for a long time, one of the highlights of ministry for me, because one, you're dealing with the death of a believer who planned his own ceremony, you know, who basically told the pastors and said, here's, this is what I want you to convey to people at my funeral. This is what I want people to hear. This, I want them to hear the gospel. I want them to hear that though my life was full of hardship and pain, that I trusted in Jesus Christ. And I believe he picked, I mean, even the songs that we sang mm-hmm. are songs that you and I had sung with him in his living room a few weeks before. And I watched him sing those songs and worship the Lord with his weak body. I mean, I just remember looking over and seeing his eyes closed and his hands raised and just him worshiping the Lord with his heart and singing those songs again at his funeral was, I don't know, there was something different about it. I couldn't look at his wife, first of all. Several times I just lost it. I didn't like lose it, start crying, but I couldn't speak. I couldn't sing. And so I had to pull away. But so that was, you know, just that part of it, being someone who is, yeah, just on fire for the Lord. And then the second thing that was kind of neat about it for me was it was at the church that I actually led worship at for 4 years at that location, and then led worship for another 2 years at an offsite service. And so there were people there who I have known since we got out of college. There were friends of ours from college there.
Yeah, it was the church where I attended my freshman year in college. So my I went to that church when I was 18.
Yeah.
And I stayed there until we left 10 years later to come down here to Richmond. So my whole church history as an adult was at that church up until the time I moved down here.
And that was the first place I was in ministry. And then, so they went to that church with us, and then there was a church plant that went up there that we actually prayed about going up there and being a part of, and they ended up going to that church, and I helped lead worship for a few events there, and so the pastor of that church was also there, and he and I had worked together a lot, and so
We were just connected with a lot of different people through a lot of different ways. And what was wonderful is that there was no competition.
Yeah.
There was no sense of, you know, lifting or elevating any church or any pastor or anybody mm-hmm. up, which you would hope would never happen at a funeral, but right. sometimes you kind of get these weird vibes.
Yeah.
And it was just none of that. Everybody just genuinely loved one another and cared for one another, was thankful for the part that each of us had played in Tony's life and in supporting Carrie. Mm-hmm. And it was just a real picture to me of heaven, what heaven is going to be like when all the barriers that we erect and bring pain to the church, you know, they're just not going to be there. There's going to be joy and acceptance and kindness and, you know, just bathing in the Lord's presence. So it was a real snapshot in some measure of what heaven's going to be like.
It was awesome because, you know, in some ways it was like my whole history of ministry right there with the exception of the guys from Kingsway. Like, so if one of the guys from Kingsway had been there, mm-hmm. it would have been just about everyone I'd worked with in ministry there at one event. Even somebody, you know, Dave Fisher, who was, mm-hmm. He was discipling me when I first started liking you in college.
He was there.
I had been
just very, very
in ministry with
full
him.
Full circle in a way.
Yeah, it was great. So that was the first one kind of in this string. And then there have been a few others since.
There have. My grandmother passed away, and this is my mom's mom. And I called her Grammy. And she just, you know, she was an older lady, and it was just time for her to go.
Yeah.
But it just came really quickly, and I didn't know if we were going to get to see her because we just had so much going on, and a trip down to Aiken isn't quick. It's
right.
a slow trip, and so at this point, the hours mattered,
mm-hmm.
and so we were racing down there to see her. At the scheduled time. And we did get to see her. She was lucid and we could communicate with her. And I showed her pictures on my iPad of the most recent ones of the kids. And she was just smiling and tears in her eyes and trying to communicate. And the very next day there was nothing, there was none of that. So we really just made it in time to see her. And, you know, she was surrounded by her three children and her husband and their spouses. And, you know, it was a very sweet time, very kind of quiet, just
mm-hmm.
gentle, and everybody just loving each other. And, you
and
know,
there was some laughter.
And there was some laughter, yes. Not a ton, but not totally devoid of
it wasn't like
of humor. It wasn't somber.
No.
But, you know, I think when I think about death, though, even though Tony is with the Lord and Carrie is surrounded by people who love her, and my grandfather, Grandy, has two of his children in the same city, just miles away, one less than a mile away, it doesn't take away the sting of death.
Yeah.
And Carrie is hurting. Mm-hmm. Like, she feels an enormous void without her husband. And Grandy and Grammy were married for almost 70 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, just because he's old doesn't mean he doesn't feel.
Right.
And, or isn't scared about his own future. I mean, I haven't asked him that, but I'm sure he has a whole new range of emotions that he never knew he would experience because he's had her by his side for most of his life.
Yeah.
So, you know, those have been some, it's taken a lot of time, a lot of preparation, and we were so grateful to be a part of all of that. But death is hard.
Yeah.
And, you know, even today my mom came over. She was picking up Jane, our youngest, because she missed her birthday because she was taking care of her mom, you know, before she passed. And my mom just needed to talk.
Mm-hmm.
She just talked. And she didn't talk a lot, but she needed to process some.
Yeah.
She says she's awake at night, and she's just thinking of her mom. And she said, I didn't know I'd do that.
Mm.
And then she wanted to see some of the pictures that we took. because we tried to capture some moments before she passed.
Yeah.
And she just teared up and the tears just couldn't stop. And, you know, my mom is in her 60s and Grammy was in her 90s. And I thought, you know, you just, it doesn't mean that you don't feel something when your mom dies.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just hard.
Yeah. And the thing that really struck me about that experience was that at the end of life, you know, a couple of things came to mind. One, at the end of life, she was not saying, hey, bring me all of the things that I have acquired. You know, surround me with all of the things that I've bought. There wasn't like a call for, you know, anything that we can waste our time on. Hey, bring me all of the time. You know, I just want to spend my last moments on Facebook.
Right. Bring me my gadgets. I need all my...
Yeah, bring me some technology. She wanted her family. And the thing that meant the most to her and to her husband and to everyone else there was that there was family there. And so for me, that was the picture that I came away with going, you know, what matters is, you know, is being with family, having family, having, I mean, even thinking about having offspring. We have 4 children, and the thought of having, you know, at the end of life, Lord willing, it will be a long time from now, but having 4 of them and you know, if they have spouses and if they have children, you know, that really, the legacy that is left behind is really what matters. The character of those people that you have raised and you've invested in and you've done all these things for, that's really what life is about. And the second thing that struck me about Grammy's passing, that I think this is probably the harder thing, is that when somebody's passing, she was right there in the room. And you know what? She had to go through that by herself. I mean, she wasn't alone, but nobody could do that for her. You know, nobody could take that. Nobody could experience it for her. Nobody could experience it with her and say, well, I'll just do this. I'll ride this out with you. And then at the end, we'll both be gone. Like, we all watched, but she was the one feeling whatever she was feeling at that moment. And that, I don't know, that just kind of struck me that in the end, everybody's got to face that. Whatever that death looks like, nobody can do that for you. And it's coming for everyone.
And I just have to believe that for believers, because we're not condemned, you know, I'm not going to say that every believer throughout the ages has died a painless death, because I know that's not true.
Right.
Like, there might be thousands, millions of Christians over the centuries who have died painful deaths, and they were ready to be with the Lord. But I think at the moment where the Lord takes you, I want to believe that there is peace.
Yeah.
And that he just takes you by the hand because he's the good shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's the time is done.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a quite an experience. I'm glad that we made it down there. We went down there on Monday. We were there for about 24 hours.
Well, and she passed.
And she passed about 2 hours after we left. So.
Well, it was really sweet because I looked at her and I kissed her hands because her hands were very gnarled from arthritis. But she did so many things for us. She wrote hundreds, if not thousands, of cards over the years. She never missed a birthday, not one anniversary, not one birthday. And my daughter got a card for her 5th birthday when she was in the hospital dying.
Wow.
So she knew that Jane was turning 5 and didn't miss it. Mm. And so anyway, I kissed her hands and I leaned over and I said, Grammy, you can go. And I said, you know, I love you and you're going to see Jesus very soon.
Mm.
And I said, and I will see you soon. And then we left. And yeah. I have heard many people say who have watched loved ones die, that they're convinced that those people can, they can hear,
mm-hmm.
you know, unless they're comatose or something, they can hear. And I just believe that when we left and she knew that we had all gone and the only ones left were her children and possibly my cousin, she was okay. She could go.
Yeah.
Because it happened very quickly after we left.
Yeah. Wow. So a couple other deaths that have gone on. A grandson of one of the members of our church passed away very suddenly. Last week, you know, when we had gotten back from South Carolina Tuesday morning or Wednesday morning very early, he passed away on Thursday. And then we're actually watching the kids of some friends of ours who, this is a couple who's good friends of ours, and her grandmother passed away. And at the funeral of her grandmother last week, her other grandmother fell and cracked her skull and then passed away like the following day at, you know, she fell at the funeral. And so they are now back up in Maryland for a second week in a row for a second funeral of, the second grandmother to pass away in that family. So it's just, I mean, it's kind of crazy how, I mean, am I missing, are there been more?
I know I've tried to keep track, but not keep track.
Yeah.
No, it just seems like this has been a season of 1 month of just deaths. And, you know, I don't know some of them.
Mm-hmm.
I know we prayed for the grandson of this member in our church. And obviously I knew Grammy and Tony. But, you know, it's always sobering, I think.
Yeah.
It's always sobering. Of course, for the believer, it's incredibly hopeful. But, you know, I think about some of the scriptures that are all over the scriptures that talk about death.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, it doesn't, I think what scripture intends to do is to give a perspective of eternity.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that verse in Ecclesiastes where it says that he has put eternity into the hearts of man so that no man can figure out what comes next.
Yeah.
And I just think none of us knows our time. None of us does. But he's put eternity in our hearts. And I think it's so that we will seek him and be sober by the fact that we're from the dust and we're going to return to the dust.
Yeah.
And what we do in life absolutely matters. But it matters because we're going to die.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I was very comforted very much by a verse in Revelation. I think it's Revelation, I want to say 14, some a verse in 14, maybe the end of 13. I can't remember. But it talks about how those who die in hope, who are believers, die and rest. And their labors are done. And I just thought that's what it is for these people. They're done.
Yeah.
And their labor is over.
Yeah. They've gone. That's at the funeral for this young man that I went to whatever night that was. That's what the preacher said, was he's gone from labor to reward, I think, was the one that he, the phrase that he used. And that was actually a really neat funeral too, because the young man who passed, his father is African American, his mom was white, and so it was quite an eclectic funeral where there's pastors on both sides of the family, and you know, this guy got up and sang Amazing Grace, and it was the most beautiful version of Amazing Grace, and we sang I'll Fly Away, and oh man, what a great that was a great experience, that one, because it was a cultural,
you experience. Know,
culturally dynamic, I'll say that, and diverse funeral service. So that was really, really kind of neat. You know, as neat as a funeral can be. So anyway, yeah, I think that's
just sort of been the theme for our lives for the last maybe month or month and a half. And you know, I think, you know, while you don't know these people, and each of us, probably know someone,
mm-hmm.
or you all have experienced death in some form. And so I think everybody can relate to this.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're all going to die. You know, that's,
yeah,
it's all there. So, you know, not to be downers, but think about it, you know, think about what's important. You know, for me, it is, okay, what is important to my life? What do I don't want to fear death. But I want to live in such a way that if I do die tomorrow, that I don't go, wait, I wish I had done this. And that sounds so cliche, but in a sense, it's very real.
Mm-hmm. Well, because we can waste our lives doing so many things that are so petty and they seem mm-hmm. so important in the moment. And when it's sort of a funerals and deaths can be opportunities for us to kind of have spiritual checkups.
Yeah.
To say, okay, where am I going? What am I doing? And am I focusing on the things that matter? And how can I refocus if things are not right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it is, you know, taking stock and looking at life and how I spend my time and all that. And even, you know, one thing I didn't mention was that somebody close to my circle of friends, I'll say, attempted suicide this week also. So that was another kind of brush with death. They were unsuccessful, and you know, I won't share any details of that. But that was another kind of aspect of that topic that is just, you know, wow. You know, visiting in the hospital, it's like you could have been dead if certain things hadn't happened. And so yeah, it's just an interesting, sobering topic to think about. So yeah, it's, I'm grateful that partly not maybe to lighten it up a little bit, I'm grateful that we have good life insurance policy for me. We just changed that. We just changed companies. So actually I need to call and cancel one.
That's right.
Because we've still got two of them. So now's a good time if you want to kill me, Beck. You'll get big money.
That's awful. No.
But anyway, so yeah, I mean, that there is some solace in that financially, but then also knowing and trusting the Lord that no matter what, his plan is perfect. His plan is better than what I can plan, and he is ultimately sovereign. He's in control over all things, and we can trust him. So, all right. I think that's going to wrap up that topic for now. If you would like to talk to us, if you want to get a hold of us and share your thoughts about anything that we've said or some ideas for topics and conversation in the future, you can do a couple of things. You can send us an email at beckandbry@aol.com, or you can go on our website, thisliminalstate.com, and you can find this episode page, TLL number 8, and you can comment. You can leave suggestions. You can leave comments, thoughts, questions, all kinds of ways you can get a hold of us. You can find us on Facebook. I'm Brian Holt. Rebecca is Rebecca C. Holt. Get in touch with us that way, and we'd love to hear from you. Love to hear if you like it, if you don't like it, all those things. And yeah, I think that's going to be all for us for this evening. We've really enjoyed this. Glad to be back in this chair talking into this microphone. And until next time, we will see you from This Liminal Knife, where we stand in the threshold
and spit in the wind.
That's right. Hashtag spit in the wind.
Oh my gosh.
All of the troubles I've disguised lay bottled up inside jars of cloudy skies, not surprised. Silver you never
wasted chances. Lock the world out again. These faded glances have filled me with doubt again. All of the trials I've survived have left scars across my life. Sun shining, blinding, I've arrived. Now it's time to step outside. That you never seen, never thought was me. That you'd only find if you look at me. That you never seen, never thought was me. That you'd only find if you look at me. That you never seen, never thought was me. That you'd only find if you look at me. That you never seen, never thought was me. That you'd only find if you look at me.
Die, 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 die